Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar. Today on Ring of Fire, Daniel Ellsberg will be here to discuss the domestic spying programs of the federal government. Climate scientist and author Michael Mann will tell us why approving the Keystone XL pipeline would be the biggest mistake the Obama administration could make. And Michael Lind from the New America Foundation will tell us why the 1% always win in American politics. You can follow Ring of Fire on Facebook or on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. And you can keep up with the latest progressive news on our website at ringoffireradio.com. And now you can tune in to Ring of Fire every Sunday at noon on Free Speech TV. And if you want to help support Ring of Fire, go online to ringoffireradio.com/support to find out how. Remember, your support helps keep us on the air. So, Pap, of course, in the news this past week, the ongoing saga or the ongoing unraveling of the Chris Christie administration continues. I don't think this guy has any hopes left in terms of 2016, but I guess that remains to be seen. But the real question is, you know, does this guy have hopes of not being led out of the governor's office in handcuffs at one point? There were a couple of new developments this week, including the refusal, or I should say the pleading of the Fifth Amendment by Bridget Kelly, the deputy chief of staff, who was, seen to have been writing David Wildstein. It's time for some traffic in Fort Lee. She is refusing to turn over subpoenaed documents, and she's pleading the Fifth Amendment.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's happening here is, first of all, I think you have potential for serious criminal issues. I mean, I think probably what's already occurred is obstruction of justice. Probably there's probably hasn't been any perjury at this point because everybody's had the good sense to plead the Fifth. But sometimes this something like this takes on the feel of musical chairs if you look at the anatomy of these kinds of things. And the worst thing that can happen to you is if you're the last person, that co-conspirator, who's still standing when everybody else has taken a seat. And there are no coincidences, Sam. I mean, nothing we see is a coincidence. For example, when you saw Christina Rena, who was directly answerable to Ann Kelly, who pled the Fifth. Ann Kelly was deputy chief of staff.
Bridget Kelly, yeah.
Yeah, Bridget Kelly, excuse me. But when you see Bridget Kelly pleading the Fifth, understand that Christina Rena has been directly answerable to Kelly, that's her boss. And that, so Christina says, "Well, I'm getting out of here. I'm resigning." And then her lawyer, and this is almost textbook. I've just seen it with so many criminal cases, much less criminal political scandals. But her lawyer then writes a letter explaining why she's resigning. And then the lawyer for Bill Stepien, I know you know this part of it, Bill Stepien, former campaign manager for Christie, also worked as deputy chief of staff on that campaign. He pleads the Fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start seeing this, what happens is that you have the truth is subpoenas are very scary things, Sam. They're the first step to trapping a co-conspirator into further criminal conduct, such as obstruction of justice or perjury. This is where you start. If the prosecutors that might be prosecuting this case down the road, if they're serious about doing their job, the textbook approach is to build a case from the bottom up. And the message is to everybody right now, be concerned, be frightened, be disgruntled, but we want to talk to you. When you saw Wildstein send out his letter, you know,
wanted to ask you about that. That was the letter that his attorney sent to the Port Authority. We saw it released, I guess it was last Friday.
Right.
Walk us through what's going on there, because that was a little bit confusing for me.
Well, what it is an invitation to come talk to Bill. I mean, to David Wildstein. I have information is saying to somebody, you didn't pay for my legal fees like I've asked you to. I'm a little mad about it, a little pissed off, And by the way, I have information that shows that that you got a Christie lying for 2 hours when he appeared in front of a press conference, lying several times after that when he makes statements that I knew absolutely nothing. Those are strong words. And when you have Wildstein's lawyer saying, you know what, come talk to me. That's what that letter is. You know, we've used it before ourselves. We've said to, when we're representing clients, you know, you need to be aware of this. We're getting ready to shoot shoot a big gun across your deck, big missile across your deck. You probably ought to come talk to us.
There was another aspect of that letter, too, where one of the paragraphs, as the lawyer is making the case to the Port Authority, I guess ostensibly that that David Wildstein should have his legal fees covered by the Port Authority, there was another paragraph in there that said, as you know, subsequent to our first request, there have been a lot of stories that have tied the Port Authority in with Chris Christie's friends in the real estate development world.
Right.
And that paragraph just sat there. Was that an invitation also to other investigators that he may or may not know something about that?
Sam, I think that's exactly right. It is that you know what? You're on to something in Hoboken. You're on to developer relationships. You're on to the idea that, yes, Christie did do exactly what he's been accused of doing. He did try to hold up money for Sandy relief in exchange for getting his good buddy, the developer, the right to go forward with the development without any kind of meaningful testing or any kind of study to find out whether it was appropriate or not. And so, yeah, that is another one of those things. The lawyer wrote the letter very well, frankly. I mean, it's the kind of thing that just sits out there. People read it and read it again, and they say, what does all this mean? The other, you know, the further development of this is where you have Christie basically saying that the New Jersey State Election Commission should be involved with paying for all these legal costs. That's never happened in the history of New Jersey, Sam. Never has the State Election Commission said, yeah, you can use campaign funds to pay for this. As a matter of fact, the New Jersey State Election Commission has actually sued office holders who's tried to use that in the past. And so that's an interesting thing. And the reason they're there is they've spent more than $12 million. They have their cap. They can't spend any more because they took matching funds, I think $8.2 million from taxpayers. And so they're now asking for special relief so they can pay for their $2,000 an hour Patton and Boggs law firm, where they put 10 lawyers all billing $2,000 to $3,000 each per hour. And so they want to get taxpayers to pay for that.
Well, this is certainly a story that has political implications, but it's going to continue on as we begin to unravel the legal proceedings that go forward. But we got to take a break, Pap. We'll be back with more news after this.
Your entrance killed the laughter in the room. And my presence killed the laughter in you. The cue card got quit yesterday. You left without a thing to say. You kindly pass on through. That's how I see you. That's how I see you.
Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar with Mike Papantonio, and we're continuing our discussion of the Ring of Fire News of the Week. So, Pap, one of the things that came up this past week, and this is one of those cases where there was just, there's two different stories about a CBO report that came out. Let's start with the sort of the more straightforward one, and then we'll get into the one about how there was just horrible reporting by the corporate press. The first is we started to see the outlines of a potential strategy by the Republicans to hold the debt ceiling hostage again. And this is being reported as if everybody forgot that they have caved twice on this. And so much of this is a bluff. One of them very well may be the Keystone XL pipeline. We'll see. And people should note that the Republicans are bluffing every time they decide they're going to hold the debt ceiling hostage, so that no one should be caving on that. But the other was They wanted to attack the Affordable Care Act again, and no surprise there, but they wanted specifically to attack what they call were insurance industry bailouts. And what they were specifically referring to was something called the risk corridor.
Right.
This was, as you know, Pap, we've talked about this, during the transitional phase as the Affordable Care Act is rolled in, insurance companies had to pay into a pool. And there were certain parameters in terms of what they could make off of insurance or what they could lose off of insurance during this transition time, because nobody was quite sure how their risk pools would be developed, whether they would have too many sick people with pre-existing conditions, since now they must accept them, or not. Well, the Republicans wanted to attack this and say, you have to repeal this part of it. Well, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan, came out with their numbers this past week, and it showed that, in fact, not only was there not going to be this a bailout to the insurance industry, it was actually going to net the U.S. government an extra $8 billion, because it turns out the projections are that insurance companies will not be losing as an industry as much money as was anticipated during this transition phase. So that is now off the table. There was one other aspect about the CBO report that came out that was just a perfect example of how the corporate media gets these things wrong. We saw this report early, I think it was on Tuesday, that the Affordable Care Act in 2017, it was going to cost Americans 2 million jobs, and by 2024, 2.5 million jobs.
It's just crazy lies. I mean, it was just absolutely insane lies. And now we see that, right?
And we saw that it was just exploded everywhere. Well, it turns out that, in fact...
But can I stop you right there, yeah. Sam? What I think is important about what you're just saying right here is that, again, it is these are journalists who I assume most of them go to school, most of them learn their trade, they learn how to investigate, they learn how to ask questions, they learn how to use resources or read. And nevertheless, this went out there, this $2 million figure, I mean 2 million people, and it just escalated because nobody did their homework. That, and isn't that the problem here?
Definitely.
It's been the problem of ACA from the very beginning, hasn't it?
I think so. I mean, look, you know, you and I have talked in the past. We would much rather have a single-payer system. There's a lot of issues with the Affordable Care Act that we have in terms of criticism from the left. But it turns out that it's not going to reduce the number of jobs. It's going to reduce the number of Americans who are forced to work.
Right.
So that they can have health insurance.
This is a phenomenon
called job lock. Many of our audience members are probably aware of it. You stay in a job because you are afraid that you won't be able to get health insurance. Now,
you know what, Sam? Some of these issues you're raising are just so critically important. From a legal standpoint, what we see when you see women in the workplace that are just abused in every kind of way, they're, you know, sexual innuendo, you name it. Personal attacks, sexual favors that bosses ask for. When we see those cases that come to us, I mean, just horrendous cases. You know, one of the top reasons that they stay is health care. I mean, that's one of the top reasons they give. When you say, "Well, why did you do this?" Well, I have four children. I have a husband that doesn't have health care insurance. And I had to stay there. I mean, that's a really tragic story, but I'm sorry. Well, I thought that would be an important addition.
Yeah, that's part of the story that I think is completely underreported. You know, for the most part, what we're hearing is that people who are age in their 50s or in their 60s, they have enough income to live or retire early, but for their fear of not having health insurance before they get to Medicare age. So basically, we're looking at about 2.5 million people. It's not a huge number of people, but it is. I mean, contemplate this. I mean, how well would we be doing right now if we had 2.5 million people who were able to leave the workforce, maybe, because Social Security had lowered the required age to retire for a couple years, you'd have 2.5 million new jobs openings for 2.5 million, maybe younger people looking for work. I mean, this is the ultimate, you know, we hear libertarians talk about freedom, and this is the ultimate freedom, right? That to leave your job because you have enough money, but for your fear about health insurance. And so, and on top of also opening up new job opportunities for younger people, what this also does, because you have less people who are entering into the labor pool, therefore you have less of a supply of labor, it creates increased pressure upwards on wages. So this is a huge win for the American people. It would be great, frankly, if it was 35 million people because we had single payer or some such. But this is a huge win. It allows for an increase in wages. It allows for younger people to get into the job market. And so the fascinating thing about this, we saw the turnaround within like 12 hours when people started to actually read the CBO report. But this is the most amazing thing. I want to read to you four paragraphs from a Politico story, or just three. The Republicans got a big gift from the Congressional Budget Office. It's going to be a lot easier for them to call Obamacare a job killer. That's because the Budget Office new economic report released Tuesday says the health care law will cause Americans to work fewer hours, enough to be the equivalent of 2 million fewer jobs in 2017. And then one paragraph later, Pap, they write, there's a lot more fine print about those numbers, what they really mean, and whether the jobs were, in quote, lost. In fact, the CBO says it's in large part about the number of hours people choose to work, not actual job losses. But what really matters politically is how those numbers look in attack ads. And in this election year, 2 million lost jobs is a Republican ad maker's dream. So they basically lie up front about the numbers. They correct themselves and say, it doesn't matter that we corrected that lie because the Republicans are going to run with it.
Yeah,
and that's all that matters.
They won't hear the rest of that sentence.
Exactly. Yeah. We got to take a break. We'll be back in the next hour with more news.
Coming up on Ring of Fire, Michael Lynn from the New America Foundation is going to be here to explain how globalization and corporatism have skewed the political system to almost a point of no return. I'm Mike Papantonio. You're listening to Ring of Fire. I'm Mike Papantonio, and you've been listening to a free sample of Ring of Fire Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full show, subscribe to our weekly podcast at our website at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air.